wrote this letter to the Corinthians, to a bickering church. They were notorious. Corinth was a port town, so it was full of sailors all the time, and it was a raucous, unsafe place. And they fought with each other. Truthfully, we should be thankful for bickering churches, because if it weren't for that, we would be missing a big chunk of the New Testament. Because Paul wrote most of his letters to churches that were fighting and getting it wrong. But here he was, writing to the church of Corinth. And last week, in chapter 12, we heard him encouraging them to remember that we are all members of one body, and that we need each other, and we need the diversity of the body. The hand, the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. And the foot cannot say to the ear, I have no need of you. We need one another. We need the various gifts. We need the different personalities and styles and characters that come along with the life of the church. And then in the next chapter, in chapter 14, he's going to be chastising them because they take all those gifts, all those distinctions, and they use them to grade people. I'm more important than you are because I have X gift and you only have Y gift. And so they would think that they were better or more important or more deserving of being heard in the life of the church. And so how do you bridge that? Because we as human beings, we haven't figured out how to solve that problem in all of our history, have we? We still do it all the time. We still want to rank everybody. How do you bridge that? And the answer for Paul is this beautiful soliloquy on love. The one that is so often read at weddings, although Paul wasn't talking about weddings at all. He was talking about how we should relate to one another in the life of the church. He wanted them to see that the very things over which they sometimes want to fight and wage war against one another are the necessary diversity that God brings to the body so that we may be whole and complete and able to do his work in the world. It is love that creates the place where that can be possible. It's love that creates the space for that to happen. I'm going to quote from Presiding Bishop Michael Curry's sermon on Friday night, which, by the way, was wonderful. If you weren't there, you missed it. I'm sure it will be available online, and I'll let you know how to get that as soon as it's out. I was told it would be out tomorrow, but we'll see. But he talked about, briefly, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia. Now, if you know anything about Supreme Court decisions, you know that you could not be further apart than Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia. Absolutely opposite ends of the spectrum. Yet it was well and widely known that they were best friends. They were very close. They had a profound affection for one another. And in the course of a documentary, Ginsburg was asked, how do you explain your friendship, your best friendship, by her own description, she said, he's my best friend on this court, with Antonin Scalia, even though they were on opposite sides of almost every decision that came out of the court? And her answer was this. She said, we share some loves. We both love opera, which gave them a little something to talk about, I guess. But then she said, we both love the Constitution. Now, we may differ wildly in how we interpret it and how we apply it and what we think it should mean for us today, but we love the Constitution. Well, if two people in that kind of a secular environment can allow their shared love for something bigger than themselves to bridge the differences, can we not do the same in the life of the church? Can we not find ways to let our common love for the scriptures, our common love for the Lord, bridge some of the differences that sometimes we come to about how it is that we are to understand it, how it is that we are to live it out. And those differences can be big and important, and they can be minor and annoying. They can be everything from the doctrine of marriage or the role of women in the life of the church to what color the carpet should be. And churches are known for getting about all of those discussions all up and down that scale. It is love that enables us to bridge differences in taste, differences in personality, differences in style, differences in gifts, differences in passions. And that's what Paul wants us to see in chapter 13. That's what he sees as the antidote for the problems that the church in Corinth was suffering. Now, chapter 13, it's actually a very interesting chapter. It's broken into three parts. The first part, Paul addresses the things that the Corinthians thought would solve all their problems. The really important stuff that they looked to. And he said, those things aren't going to solve your problems. And then he goes to a brief description of what love is supposed to look like. Not warm, fuzzy love, but hard, willful, chosen, deliberate, careful, thoughtful, committed love. And what that should look like. And then he goes on to remind them that all of those other things that you value are going to pass away. The one thing that will be permanent is love. So he begins like this. If I speak in the tongues of men, of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. It doesn't matter if I am eloquent, if I am a great speaker, if I am able to rally lots of people to what it is that I have to say, if I am able to gather great crowds to come and listen to me, if I am able to convince others to see things my way. If I don't exercise that gift and that skill in love, it is a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. In other words, it is for nothing. The Corinthians put a lot of stock in those who were great orators, and the great orators of the day, the great speakers, those who sounded wise and thoughtful and smart, the kind of celebrities of the day. And then he goes on, and if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. So even if I add to all those skills of wisdom and intellect and oratory, if I add to those prophetic powers that I can see and understand things from God's perspective, that I can speak with divine God-given wisdom, if I don't do that in love, I am nothing. And then he goes on one more step. He says, if I give away all my possessions and even hand over my body, but do not have love, I gain nothing. It doesn't matter if I'm the most generous person in the world. It doesn't matter if I sacrifice my fingers right down to the bone serving you. If I don't do it in love, if it is not guided by love, strengthened by love, defined by love, I gain nothing. You see, those were the things that the Corinthians looked to. They thought wisdom and the ability to convince everybody to be on the same page and to be able to speak with a sense of divine wisdom and have great faith and confidence that God would accomplish his purposes. And even to give everything that I have and everything that I am to that cause. They thought that that would fix their problems. But Paul wants them to remember, it's not enough. Those things are all good. Paul encourages us to give. Paul encourages us to be wise. Paul encourages us to seek the gifts of prophecy and wisdom and knowledge. It's not that he has anything against them. But if we look to them to solve our problems, we will miss. It is when those gifts are exercised in love that they take on their true godly power. And then he carries on with some descriptions of what this love is supposed to look like. Because this is not just warm, fuzzy love. This is committed, thoughtful, careful, deliberate, sacrificial love. He begins, love is patient. You find it curious that that's the very first thing he said? Love is patient. If I were to sit down and write out the characteristics of love, I'd probably put patient in there somewhere, but I wouldn't put it at the top of the list. But you know what it is? We are not patient. We want everything now. We want it fixed now. But loving people takes time. Caring for people requires patience. You know what? People don't get fixed the first time you tell them what they need to do. Loving people, caring for people, serving people is a long-haul proposition. And if we lack patience, it's going to be almost impossible for us to be loving. We must learn patience. These things require a lot of time. I was reminded, this is a silly little illustration of that, but we have some folks from the Watoto Choir who I'll talk about at announcement time, who are staying at our home. And one of them was injured on a previous choir tour. He is in charge of the lighting and sound equipment. He had fallen off some of the equipment and injured his back, and he's wearing a brace and so forth and trying to get some chiropractic care. Well, if you know anything about chiropractic care, it can be wonderful for the right kinds of injuries, but you have to do it for a while repeatedly over a period of time. And so he had been to visit a chiropractor in one town, and they had worked on him and adjusted him, and he felt great for, you know, the routine, a day or two. And then he was right back to where he started. You have to do it over and over again, over an extended period of time, for it to be beneficial. And the same is true of us, and of working with one another, and serving with one another, and loving one another. If we want to reap the benefits of it, we have to be patient. We have to keep going. We can't expect others to respond just right the first time. Love is patient. And then he continues, love is kind. Now I want to draw a distinction here. He did not say, love is nice. Now, I love nice people. Nice is great. Nice is about keeping everybody comfortable in the moment. Kindness is more that commitment to do what is right and necessary for the other person. You know, if I go to visit my doctor, it might be nice of him to say, oh, you're looking great. But it might be kind of him to say, you know, you really need to lose some weight. Right? That might be the necessary thing. So Paul wants us to not just be nice, but to be kind. And then he goes on with some things that are not a part of love. I would presume because he saw these things among the Corinthians. Love is not envious. In other words, love doesn't look around and think, I want what you got. Love looks around and thinks, I am so thankful to God that he has given you that blessing. And I celebrate with you that you have whatever it is, even if it's something that I lack. Love can look at another person and celebrate what God has given to them without applying it selfishly and personally and woe is me because I don't have it. Love is not envious. Love is not boastful. Love doesn't have to talk about how wonderful I am. Love simply loves. Love is not arrogant. See, love realizes I'm no better than you. I may be in a different place. I may have a different perspective. But in the eyes of God, we are precisely equal. Let me say that again. In the eyes of God, we are equal. It doesn't matter if in human terms one's smarter. Remember, he trashed that in the first few verses. Okay? It's not arrogant. It is not rude. Now, rudeness may seem a small thing, but at its heart, rudeness is really about dismissing the value of the other person. It says, you're not worthy of me taking the time and care to speak to you in a way that honors you as a person. That's really what's at the heart of rudeness. Love is not rude. Love does not dismiss another person. Love does not see another as unworthy of my effort and energy and attention. It does not insist on its own way. You know, love is not my way or the highway. It is not irritable or resentful. In other words, it doesn't just, it's not snapping at people all the time. And love is not resentful. Love doesn't hold on to those wrongs and keep track of them and log them. I remember watching the breakdown of the marriage of a couple of friends of mine many years ago, not at St. John's, don't start thinking about it. But as I watched this marriage break apart, they just built up resentment toward each other. And every time an issue came up between them, they would pull out all the old issues and just keep throwing them across the table again, sometimes literally dishes across the table. But they would just keep hurling the old resentments over and over again. Love doesn't do that. And then Paul goes on, after describing some of these basic characteristics of love, to remind the Corinthians that it's love that will last. Love never ends, he says. As for prophecies, they will come to an end. There will come a time when we will not receive that kind of divine wisdom because we will all be in the presence of God. We won't need it. As for tongues, they will cease. We won't need them anymore. We'll all understand each other within the kingdom. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. It won't be about how smart I am versus how smart you are, because God will reveal to all of us what we need. For now we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. All we get is a little glimpse of the wisdom and wonder of God. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. Then he puts in this part that I think was quite a deliberate jab at the Corinthians. He says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. You get what he's saying to them? You are behaving like a bunch of third graders on the playground. This bickering and picking at each other all the time. It is unworthy, and it is not adult behavior. For now we see in a mirror dimly. And we should remember that we all see dimly in that mirror. And the only way we'll get the right perspective, by the way, this is a little beyond what he was saying, but if we all share together in looking in that dim mirror, maybe together we'll get the right picture of what we are striving for. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. And the greatest of these is love. The one that bridges everything else. The one that makes all the other gifts make sense. It's not that the other gifts are worthless or meaningless. Paul spends lots of time encouraging the gifts, wanting us to pursue the gifts, wanting us to be wise and thoughtful and knowledgeable about our life in Christ and our faith. He wants all that for us. But he wants us to understand that if we don't exercise that in love, that is, in commitment to the better of the other person, then we gain nothing. Faith, hope, and love abide. But the greatest is love. Amen.